Blog Talk Radio.
I'm getting down to the sum of this, the sum of that, the sum of everything.
Alright,
this is me, it's Chris to the C, Miami Six Man on your Twitter feed. And you can also follow Come Get Some at CGS here on Twitter. Email cgshere@gmail.com for tips, hints, ideas. If you want to be a guest, if you want to work with me, if you want to do anything, if you want to complain, whatever you want to do, do that. Before we get started with my interview today, I want to address the 452-pound aardvark in the room. I was going to talk about LeBron James and my dream, my thought, my wishful thinking, my theory that LeBron James will choose to come back to Miami after the season. However, we all woke up to some pretty bad news this morning. Back when I was a very young person, I first became a huge wrestling fan when I saw Thunder Lips standing next to Rocky Balboa on the big screen on Rocky III. And I've seen so many larger than life characters since then. So there's Hulk Hogan, there's Randy Savage, the late great Randy Savage, and the late great Ultimate Warrior, and the late great eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant, leading us to the next greatest thing, most amazing, larger than life thing to come to wrestling, the ninth wonder of the world, China. Johnny Lawler lived a very train wreck like life coming down the stretch here. So there's going to be some apathy and some people who feel negativity towards her because of the way she lived her life and some of her bad choices. But we don't want to forget, none of this really equates to being a good person and what you have to offer in this world. And she offered and gave us a lot during her time. So I joined the masses in mourning China, Johnny Lawler. And I wish the best to our family and friends and positive thoughts and well wishes there. And now to my conversation. All right, my guest today, she's been on the screen with Don Johnson. She's been on the big screen with Robert De Niro and Robin Williams and Patricia Arquette. She has also done some writing and producing and illustrations for children's books. Please welcome to the show, avid hashtagger. Talented actress and wonderful friend, Patricia Ray. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy that you are venturing on into your podcasting because I speak a lot about, challenging yourself and reinventing yourself. And, you've always been so gracious. And when you read my blog, to support the things that I do. So I wanted to return the favor and support your new adventure.
Well, thank you, Patricia. That's great. Should I call you Patricia or Pat? What's the best thing to call you?
Well, my friends call me Patty. Some people call me Pat, not too many. And then Patricia's just kind of like my professional name. So you're welcome to call me Patty.
I'm already a friend. All right, Patty. I love your work. Now, my familiarity with your work, and I think a lot of people's familiarity, however you say that word, is going to be from
familiarity.
That's right. That. I think it's going to be from when you were on Chuck a few years back. That's how I recognize you. Chuck was one of my favorite sitcom adventure spy shows. And my favorite season of Chuck was the second season, which is where your character, Bologna, Morgan's mom, was introduced.
Oh, thank you. That was such a fun show. I made very good friends on that show with Mark Christopher Lawrence, who played my love interest, and Scott
Big Mike.
Big Mike and Scott Krinsky, Jeff from the Jeff and the other mutt guy. I forget his name. Oh my
he
God.
Was in the Nerd Herd.
Vic
yeah.
Sehey is his real name, the actor. He's a really good friend of mine.
That's awesome.
Such a good opportunity to do comedy. I don't often get to do comedy. I'm usually cast in blue collar roles as a victim, which is fine. You know, I make my bread and butter that way on television. If you've ever seen me on The Mentalist or Law and Order or Blue Bloods or, you know, a bunch of shows I've done on TV, I'm usually crying. So when I got to be sexy and funny, and I was just so thrilled. So I,
Red Hot
I was,
Mama.
Yes, Red Hot Mama. That was such so fun. So that's I wish it would have gone on a little longer, but you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity. I was supposed to get married in the beginning of season 3 because I don't know if you remember, but they throw the bouquet and I catch it.
That's right.
At the wedding, at Chuck's sister's wedding, and then they decided the following year, because NBC was on the fence whether they were going to cancel the show or not, but the fans kept keeping it alive because the fans were so avid. And so the fans got the show to come back, but NBC cut the budget, so they cut my wedding.
Oh, that would have been awesome to see. I'll tell you this, and I'm not just blowing smoke, and it's not just because I know you from Twitter, but some of the best scenes in season 2 had you in them, and you weren't really doing much, but you kind of stood out. Everybody. So something eye-rolling would happen, and everybody would have a reaction, and you stood out. And I wasn't looking for it. I just remember it, you know. Go ahead and say.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun, like I said, you know. It was, I was really hoping that they would, you know, find a storyline for my character, and they really did like me, and they did discuss it, but like I said, there just wasn't money for so many auxiliary stories, and so, what are you going to do? You going to move on?
It was a funny time, because that was the time when DVRs and digital media is becoming much more mainstream, much more used.
You're right. I think if Chuck were to air now, they wouldn't have been worried so much about like time slots and stuff, because people could watch it on their DVRs, and I think it would have been a lot more successful.
Yeah, Chuck had a lot of good competition on Monday nights, and it still got a lot of people to watch it, just not when it aired, and that was unfortunate for a lot of shows during that time frame.
That is true. That is true, my friend.
So not only Chuck, but Patricia Ray suffered because Nielsen couldn't figure out to get their act together at that time what to do with the TV.
But
it's funny. You said that was like your rare opportunity to do a comedy role. You're usually crying, but didn't you start out inspired by comedy, is that right?
I did. I actually wrote and performed sketch comedy for many years in New York with a sketch comedy troupe called Foul Soul Comedy Troupe. And actually, my friend Andrea Nevado, who plays, she has a great role on Jane the Virgin. She plays Jane's mom. She was in the group with me, and a lot of friends of mine who have gone on to be very successful actors were in this troupe, and it was just so crazy because we would go to, like, prisons and perform sketch comedy. I performed at a lot of famous comedy clubs in New York, and it was just, you know, it was a good exercise in like just doing improv and making yourself available and talking and listening, because you cannot do comedy without listening. If you don't listen, you're in trouble.
Right.
So I think it was a great, great tool. The only problem that I find actors fall into this kind of a bad acting tick is that when they do like a sketch comedy, they get very broad. So once I got to LA and I started doing a lot more television, I realized I really had to tone everything down, because TV is all heads. It's all talking heads.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
very small, you know, so I had to really learn how to tone everything down and just, you know, think more than, you know, be, like, active with my body and my face.
Gotcha. There's different levels, like stage versus soap versus primetime TV versus film. It's all acting, but there are different levels, right? It's just the way you come across.
Absolutely. I find that film, it's like more of like, you know, you start with the wide shots, you see people's legs and arms, and, you know, you get more of a natural feeling of like, well, people really, you know, if you're like in your stillness, you think, and on film you think, you know, you think what your emotions are, because remember, when they get into the close-ups, your head's going to be like, you know, on a screen, so you don't want to be big, but you get to be a little bit more natural, like a more of like a natural way of acting. And television, it's all driven by the story, and everybody's a tool to tell the story. So it's all very driven by the lines, you know, the information that you have to get out in each episode. So that's all just like really talking and reacting. So I tend to like to do film better, because a lot, you get more of a character arc. You get to build a beginning, a middle, and an end for a character.
Right.
Where on television, you're just really just an instrument for information for whatever the plot, the storyline is.
Right. Right. And then in the cases like in Chuck, you the story may never get a payoff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You get cut. Yeah.
And they do that a lot. You know, they start a lot of different stories. And they, like, say, like, take The Walking Dead. They'll start a story with, like, Michonne or this one. And then they'll see how the audience reacts to that. And then they might continue, or they might decide, you know what, this isn't the right way to go. Let's, you know, move in another direction.
Cool. You've done a few films. When you did The Big Wedding, which I urge everyone to go see or rent or find, it's a very funny movie. When you did The Big Wedding, what was it like to be on the same set as Robin Williams and Robert De Niro?
Wow, that's a like job of a lifetime. Absolutely, most people never get to work with one of those caliber of actors. Never mind all of them, and with Robert De Niro, Diane Keaton, Susan Sarandon,
right,
Robin Williams, Amanda Seyfried.
I left a lot of names out of that. You're right. Catherine Hagel.
And then my friend from the that 70s show.
Oh, I forget his name. I know who you're talking about. He was a funny character in that movie as well.
Yeah, I'm going to think of his name.
It's like on the tip of my tongue.
And Ben Barnes, who played my son, who's done really well for him. Topher Grace,
that's right.
Who's hysterical. He's just a really down-to-earth, very funny, self-effacing kind of guy. Just really lovely. He threw a party and we had a really good time, and you know, he stayed at his parents' house because he was born and raised in Connecticut. We shot in Connecticut. And so he told the producers, don't get me a hotel. I'm going to go stay with my mom and dad. So he went and stayed in his old room that, like, looked exactly the same from, like, when he was a kid. That was funny. But, again, Robert De Niro is just a super gracious human being, so generous, just really lovely, very giving on camera, and just, you know, fearless. Diane Keaton, oh my God, she was an acting lesson.
Really?
So beautiful, just to watch her process and her preparation. She really, she likes to use music. Her music really helps to put her in her space and also creates like this privacy, like moment before. So she like wears her headphones right before she works, and then she just takes, rips them off, and she throws them anywhere, in a bush, wherever she is. And then she'll just go into her character. And she was just so funny and so giving. And so was Robin Williams was just like really, really, I was afraid because I have that big scene with him where I'm doing the confessional scene.
Right.
And I was worried that he was going to upstage me and that this was going to like get like blown out of proportion, and he was going to go into like some, you know, one of his Robin Williams antics. But he was very calm and so giving. He just was like, why don't we try it like this? And then, you know, you do ba 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 ba, and then I'll go, and then, but you keep talking. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, yeah, like, I can't get a word out. And I'm like, I get to shut Robin Williams up? That's crazy.
Yeah, well, he gets it. You know, well, he is able to get it. He really understands, him and De Niro both, I imagine, really understand the business and just, you know, it's good to hear that they take care of the co-stars, because there are celebrities who probably are more about themselves, and that's
yeah.
always great to hear stories
and
like that.
And we won't mention who those people are.
The only thing
I will say that I find that the older the actor is and the more experienced he is and the more comfortable he is in his own person, the more gracious they are. The newer celebrities that are, like, really, like, you know, at the top of their game, but they're, like, nouveau celebrities, those are the ones that I find that I have the most difficulty, because they don't connect. They don't really look at you. They don't take you in as a person. They don't, you know, it's like you're basically dispensable to the, you're like, especially on TV. Oh, my God.
Right. How can you help me, right?
It's not even that. It's like, you know, I'm here, this is about me, this is my show, you know, and you're going to be gone after this episode, so I'm not going to invest in you, you know?
Wow.
But the older actors, like I said, the older actors are very gracious. But, you know, like Damian Lewis, I did an episode of this show called Life.
Okay.
That he plays an ex-cop that gets thrown off the force, and he ends up winning the lottery, and then he has all this money, so he makes the police force make him, give him his badge back or something like that. And he was super gracious, very nice, very open. But there's, you know, everybody's different.
Yeah, I mean,
the director on that show, he wasn't that kind to me.
Oh, I'll hear that.
Yeah, that was one of those, I'm going to probably blog about all my Hollywood war stories. Those are coming. I knew they were getting ready to do, like, they were doing all the coverage of the actors. So what happens is that, you know, once they do, like, a wide shot of the whole scene and everything, they start to come in closer and closer, tighter shots with tighter lenses, and until you get your coverage. You get a single or over the shoulder, they call it, where it's over one actor's shoulder, the back of one actor's shoulder to your close-up. Well, they were coming into my coverage, it's called. And so I said to him, I kept saying, where's my camera? Because I always want to know where the camera is, especially for my coverage, because I want to angle my face towards that camera, you know, kind of cheek toward it, you know, so that I'm not giving them my ear, you know, because they don't really, the camera people aren't going to be like, hey, you're not, you know, this isn't a good, you're good angle.
Right, and it's standard, yes. It's standard. You need to be facing the camera at least a little bit. Or you're not really doing what you're supposed to be doing.
At this level of the game, you should know these kind of tricks, you know?
Right.
So I said to the director, excuse me, can you tell me what cameras? Because, you know, on these shows, these multi-camera shows, they're shooting camera A and B, so you don't always know what camera is shooting you. So I said to him, can you tell me what camera I'm getting my coverage on? He goes, Oh, don't worry. We're covering you on a secret camera, he says to me. I was like, oh, a secret camera. Okay, thank you. Basically, what he's telling me was, don't worry about it. You're not getting a close up in the shot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
you
I got
that.
Isn't that? I was like, wow, you are rude. That wasn't my favorite director to work with, and I don't even know his name, to tell you the truth. I've worked with a lot of directors on television, and a lot of, like, for instance, the director who directed me in the episode of Chuck, that the one where Mark and I are having sex, and my son Morgan can hear it through the window.
Yes.
That one? That's a funny episode.
Might be my
that
favorite scene.
And he was like, oh, gross, Mom. That is. That was directed by Jeremiah Chechik. And I don't know if you're familiar with Jeremiah Chechik, but Jeremiah Chechik directed Christmas Vacation.
No way.
Yeah, he did.
Love
so
Christmas Vacation.
That's the kind of stuff that I do when I'm going on a set. Some actors don't give a crap, but I'm like, I want to know who the director is. So I look them up on IMDb, and I'm like, oh my God, Christmas Vacation is one of my favorite movies ever. And the funny thing is, at 6 degrees of separation, Chevy Chase ended up being on Chuck too, because he played he played Chuck's dad.
He didn't play Chuck's dad.
Yeah, exactly.
He was hopeful.
So I was like, wow, you know, here for Christmas Vacation is my favorite movie. Jeremiah Chechik is directing this episode, and Chevy Chase is on the show. So I brought in a vintage copy of that I had of Christmas Vacation, and I asked him to sign it for it. And he signed it, and he wrote, the shitter is full.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God, that's cool.
No, that's tough, because I imagine that would be like me. One of the things that has held me back is fear and trust. And you want to be able to trust your surroundings when you come on the set, so you're checking all things out. You find this limits your opportunities, though?
What?
That you're making sure when you go on the set that it's the director you want, and you know the people you're working with are going to be people who are people that you're comfortable working with.
Well, I'll take a job no matter what, unless I've already had an experience with a certain person. But I think the problem in this town is you really can't burn your bridges. So you're going to work with people you don't like, you know.
Right.
It happens. I did a film a few years ago with a director that I had a terrible time with. I almost had like a breakdown on the set because it was a film that had a bunch of celebrities in it, wonderful actors, and the director, and I had a small supporting role. I played a teacher, and I had like one big scene in the whole film where I actually had like a monologue, right? So that was,
right.
I had little scenes here and there, but like my big piece of resistance was in this big auditorium scene. And I'm sitting there, we're shooting the scene, and all of a sudden the director says to me, when we do this take, I don't want you to say anything. And I'm like, what? And he goes, yeah, just don't say anything. And I'm like, you don't want me to deliver my lines. He says, exactly. Starts rolling the camera. All of a sudden, the actress next to me, Blythe Danner, she's Gwyneth Paltrow's mom, she starts delivering my lines. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I could tell that she was super uncomfortable, and she was like, having a lot of trouble because it was a lot of lines to, like, memorize on the fly, you know?
Right.
And then she kept saying, I don't want to do this. This isn't right, you know? I haven't worked. I haven't prepared this. And all of a sudden, I realized that the director decided that my character wasn't going to give this speech, that character was going to give the speech, but he didn't have the decency to come and tell me that. He just told me, don't talk in the next tape.
Wow.
Yeah, and I had a very hard time dealing with that because I was very upset. I felt like I was totally disrespected, that he had no consideration for my craft or the fact that I was a local hire. I lived in New York, but the movie was shot. I was living in L.A., but the movie was shot in New York. And so I had to fly myself there. You know, so it had cost me some money to get there and stuff. The Blythe was being very gracious and she said, well, at least you're still getting paid. And I said to her, yeah, not really. I had to fly myself here, so it kind of evens out. And she goes, I'm really sorry about that. So she ended up talking to the director and saying, you know, I don't think this is right. So later he gave me some other business to do, and I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, I appreciated that he tried to make an effort, but
right.
I never even watched the movie. I refused to watch the
movie. I don't think he wanted to break it to you, but still.
I just don't really think he cared. He really didn't care.
That's terrible.
He wasn't an actor's director. He's a director's director. He just, you know, it was about his process and what he needed, and everything else was, collateral.
Yeah, and that kind of goes against what you said about, like, Robert De Niro and Robin Williams, where they understood the whole process and they made sure everybody was taken care of the right way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And James Caan was in this movie, too. And he was very nice. After he came up to me, he said, I'm really sorry about that. That should never happen to an actor. And I was like, yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to chalk that one up to experience.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is that when you start to learn not to take things personally? It just is what it is?
Also, you start to, like, start to figure out what's important to you. Like, I would have just spoken to him. Like, now if that would have happened to me now, I would have come up to him and said to him, listen, if you don't want my character to be in this film, I understand it's your prerogative, but you know what? I don't need this job, and I would have left.
Right.
I said, I'm not really making money to be here. I'm not going to be in this movie, obviously. And I would have taken my dignity with me, and I would have left. I would have said, thank you, and I'm leaving.
Well, there's a certain level of
But I didn't
you
do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you learn your lessons. That was a lesson to me to value my craft.
Right.
I think all of these experiences happen to teach you these things. It was to teach me that, you know what, I am very good at what I do, and I am very experienced, and I don't need to be treated like this, and I don't need this job. I can say no.
That's a great thing to have that power to do. That's definitely, and that's you, it's you empowering yourself. That's awesome.
Exactly. You know, and a lot of actors, you know, have to learn those lessons on a set. Unfortunately.
All right, so that was Patricia Ray, part one. Part two next week, she talks about stage. She might get punched in the face. And she talks also about Nielsen's again, more like residuals and Netflix. I'm sorry I'm a little bit rushed here. I'm almost at the end of the show. But I just want to say thank you for listening. Next week, I will get into my theory on LeBron James coming to Miami, which I call his home, and I'll explain it all next week. It'll be a lot of fun. And then part two, Patricia Ray with 10 questions. You all have a great week, and that about sums it up.
I'm getting down to the sum of this, the sum of that, the sum of everything.
Come on.